On this episode of Chicago Beer Pass, Jesse joins us to talk about Dry Hop, Roebuck, Corridor, and Crushed by Giants. We also dive into our experiences with The Last Dance. All that and more on this week's episode. Here we are, hitting up events, drinking our way through Chicago beer, and trying not to miss a thing.
Yeah, because, you know, got a cork popped out, boom, it just flies like fucking 10 feet. We're like, yeah, let's do it.
You know, all you have to do is add some fruit, stir it up, and ride that milkshake wave.
Whenever I see him, I gotta take a photo with the most decorated brewer in Chicago, Jonathan Cutler.
It'll be like the stuff you hear. You ever go to, every time you go to Floyd's, all the music sounds like this. Raw, raw, raw.
Sometimes you want a small beer, but really, you want a big beer.
You gotta take in all those big aromatic hops.
Hey, what are you doing this weekend? Waiting in line for a bottle release?
You should have never been a fad. The black IPA is delicious.
Hey, and welcome to Chicago Beer Pass. I'm Brett Chmielewski.
Brett, what's up, man? I'm Nick White.
And we got a special guest joining us, Jesse, Mambacue, currently Corridor and all that crew over there, but welcome. What's up?
Thanks, man. How you guys doing?
Good, man. Good, man. Jesse Valenciana is joining us. I think we are. We're checking off 2/3 of our Mambacue.
Right.
Our Mambacue here, man. We have Carruthers on. John Carruthers from Rev.
Yeah.
Now we got Jesse on. Who are we missing? I think we're missing John. John's over where's John at? He's over at
Think Snobby. No, I'm just kidding. He's in Cicerone.
That's right, Cicerone.
Yeah. All right, so we'll have to finish off the sandwich here soon. All right, so we got a lot to talk about. There's lots of moves you've been making, but first, you dropped off some beer, and I'm drinking it here, and it looks like you're drinking it too. So this is a beer you brewed with more, and it's Mango Goes.
Yeah, so that beer was, you know, when I was with Goose Island, a lot of guys used to make fun of me because I always wanted to make a goza. It's like one of my favorite styles of beer. And it's been on like my mind for a while. And a couple months ago, I was hanging out with the guys from Moore and we were just chatting. And, you know, before I said anything, they were like, hey, like, would you ever do a collaboration? And they wanted to do like a Mambacue collaboration because they have really good food at their at both of their spots. And I was like, well, you know, I'm about to launch this new project that I've been kind of ruminating on, and I'd love to have that be the like partner in this. And so that was Feast City, and so we're talking about that. And I said, it's not like the grilling meat centric organization that Mambacue was. I'm like, it's really more of a refined, delicate food kind of, you know, project. So as the more we talked, like the more we started talking about styles, and I had this idea for this beer that kind of was like a reflection. It's like an homage to a snack that my grandma used to give me when I was a kid. So I just remember like summertime, her cutting up mango, and we would always have limes around the house, and she would just squeeze fresh lime, throw some salt, sometimes some tahini on top. And that, like, every time I think of summer, that's the snack that I think about. So, you know, we were kind of going back and forth on all these other ideas for beers. And this is kind of the one that I shared, and everybody's eyes just kind of lit up. And they're like, holy shit, this could be something that really works. And Brad, you were tasting it. It's a super juicy beer, very mango-y. And what I like about it is that you taste that, like, little bit of spice on your lips at the end, which is really
right.
Cool.
It says Big Mitch Chili Spice, right?
Yeah.
So is that a brand of chili spice, or is that just
Big Mitch? They are a brand of micheladas. They're local, super super nice dudes. They're great, and I was talking to them, and you know, we became good friends. And when this beer kind of came up, I really thought it'd be a good idea to like go the extra mile, right? And it's like, right, we've got the mango, we've got the salt, we've got the lime, but what can really make it special? And those guys make their own homemade tahini, so it was just kind of a no-brainer.
There was a on 312 day, I think there was one of the ones we didn't understand what it was. It was called Big Mitch. And so yeah. It's all coming from the circle. Me and Brad, I thought like Brad, I'm like, there's one Mitch, and then there's one called Big Meech. Like, yeah. What the hell's that? So, all right. Finally. Yeah, that didn't take long. Just a couple months. We figured it out.
No, they do a homemade michelada. They do different michelada, I guess, not sauces, but like michelada blends. And that's kind of how we got on each other's radar. Last year at Goose, I wrote an article about micheladas because being a Mexican guy, like, I mean, you have to drink micheladas, right? So I have my own recipes. And when I was doing my research on micheladas, somebody goes, oh, do you ever have Big Meech? And I was like, what the hell is that? I thought it was fake. And I was connected to those guys, and they're as passionate about micheladas as I was. So it was just kind of like this, it made sense for us to chat and figure things out.
Nice. I think the two places I usually get a michelada at are Big Star and then Pub Royale.
Oh, yeah. Pub Royale, they're right down the street from me. I used to live like two blocks away from them.
Okay.
And I was there every Monday because they have that special. You get like either a burger or a chicken tikka cotti roll, and then a shot of either tequila or bourbon, and you get a ham that's dressed.
Right. Yeah.
So that's like I miss that so much. I miss that. When we become free men again, I'm going to go to Pub Royale and have too many of those.
Definitely. But Nick, so you don't have a can of this, but what are you drinking?
I have the Pipeworks Infinite Citra. Yeah, it's 7%. I remember this coming out last summer, and I took it to Ravinia the last time I went. God, Ravinia, no Pitchfork.
Oh, yeah, no.
Good. It's like funeral. You're like making funeral announcements. It's this is.
But yeah, there's I guess this mango goes, it kind of like goes in line with all this juicy, hazy stuff right now. So it like fits perfectly. That does it. I'm not always a huge goes fan, but like this one, I don't know. I'm digging it a lot. It fits right there. It like ticks all the marks for me.
Yeah. So that was the thing. I am not a juicy, hazy IPA guy, even though right now the first beer I have to finish is the Cosmic Juice Box that we make at Corridor. So we just released it on Monday. We canned it. And it's a bit heavy for my liking, but I'll drink it, right? And like the same thing with the Goza. I like very traditional German Gozas, you know? I think Americans, obviously, like we always take everything to the umpteenth degree. When American breweries started making Gozas, they were just like dumping so much salt.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like there wasn't like a science to it, right? They were just kind of like, well, this is what we get. But the beauty of actual German Gozes was that salty brininess was like from the water in the Gozer region, right? So it was like very minerally and very rounded. I know Westbrook Brewing, they did a pretty decent Goza, but even that, when you pair, like compare it next, put it next to a German Goza, and it's like so salty. So I've made another Goza before. It was a cucumber lime Goza with a brewery up in Minnesota. And my input was that we do like Himalayan sea salt because it's a little bit more rounded. It's not as sharp as, you know, just like a kosher salt. And it came out really well. So in talking with these guys, that's kind of how we approached it. It was like, we want to make something that's, you know, not to sound too marketing-y, but like drinkable, right? Like you want to have more than one beer at all times. So like, you don't want it super salty, and the juiciness too. Like that's another thing. I don't ever really go for really juicy beers, but for some reason it all works in this beer.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's a style that's coming back? Because I got a delivery from Hopewell the other day, and they also had a Goza. Like I was like, what? Like I haven't seen one in a while. I haven't even seen them on the menu. I haven't like even thought about it. And now I had two show up in the like last week.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, look at how American breweries interpret beer, right? Like the parameters that are set by the styles kind of get thrown out the window. So like a Goza is like, yeah, in theory, it's a Goza. You know, it's got lactobacillus. It's got this. It's got that. So it checks off all those boxes. This is a Goza. But everything else that gets added and you know, like the approach is different. So it's a Goza in theory, but like this is like a whole, if you didn't tell me it was a Goza, I wouldn't, honestly, I would have thought it was like a juicy Berliner Weiss or something.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
You know? So it's like, I think a lot of people do Gozas. You know, one of the, my favorite Gozas is Off Colors, because that's more of a traditional Goza. What's the name of that one?
I think it's Troublesome, right? Is it Troublesome?
Yeah. Beautiful beer. And like that's the closest I feel, in Chicago at least, to a traditional German Goza. So like you taste that compared to this, it's way different.
Totally, yeah. Yeah, so you say you don't like, or you're not the biggest fan of these hazy beers, but now you're working for some of the kings of the city over there.
Yeah. It's, you know, I went a long time without really being a big fan of hoppy beers, because I spent about a year and a half on the West Coast for work. So when I came back to Chicago before they moved me to New York, I was just kind of hopped out. And this is, you know, around the time where like West Coast IPAs were just like reigning supreme over everything. And I really did have palate fatigue. So I had this like almost Pavlovian response to hops. I was just like, get that the hell away from me. And, you know, I started working in the beer industry, and it's like, well, you can't just do that. You can't just say, no, don't drink this because you don't like it. Like, you have to taste it. How can I honestly tell someone that, you know, Goose Island IPA is better than yours if I can't compare the two? So that's kind of what pushed me back into drinking IPAs, not on the regular, but like I still like to taste them so I can at least, you know, be informed and tell someone what I'm drinking and what it is the characteristic of certain hops. Mm-hmm. But are they my go-to? Hell no.
Yeah. I don't know. So, yeah, I guess going back a little bit, So Goose Island, you were there for a while, and I was kind of surprised to hear you weren't there anymore. How was that time at Goose Island? Like, what was kind of, I guess for people that don't know, what was your role? And I don't know, what was your experiences like?
Yeah, so going back to before me working at Goose, Goose Island was always that place that I very much admired. I fell in love with craft beer because of Goose Island, to be honest. The first time I ever had something that wasn't like my dad's old style or Budweiser was Goose Island, you know? And that was kind of what taught me that there was other beers out there. And then fast forward many years, having the opportunity to even get on the radar was cool. And, you know, A, I admired the beer that they were doing. B, I admired the business that they were doing. You know, having these guys be pioneers in craft beer here in Chicago was like a source of pride. And I'm a homer, right? So I love Chicago stories. So when I had the opportunity to interview with them, it was a dream come true. It was cool. And I remember, so John Carruthers and I were chatting, and we had just written our first book, and there was like the space between the end of the book and before the book hit shelves. So I was like, all right, I've got some time. Do I start doing catering again, or do I look for maybe something else before the book hits shelves and we start doing all that? So I interviewed at Goose originally as a brand ambassador. And I went in there for the interview, and they were kind of like, you're a little bit overqualified for this. Is this what you want to do? And I said, well, I could take a part-time job. I've got this book coming out. And they said, you would be perfect for this other role that we've got. And that was my first job at Goose. And it was the National Activation Manager. So it was pretty much like, cool, I get to go around the country, ended up being around the world to talk about Goose Island beer. Yeah, sign me up. And Carruthers, actually, it was funny because I said, hey, man, so I know we've got the book coming out. There's this opportunity at Goose. And so here's the job. And he looked at me and he goes, if you don't take this job, you're the dumbest person I know, and I'll lose all respect for you. I'm like, all right, right on. Cool. I'll accept a job. But that's how I started. And when I was there, I was managing this campaign called Migration Weeks. And it was neat because we got to go around and, you know, talk about beer and like just how elevated it was becoming. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was great because I got to be really creative and put together events in other cities. So we get used to working here in Chicago, and it's very comforting. It's very safe. And to go to like the big beer cities and as Goose Island, which is a big brewery. And at the time, things were still very hostile towards Goose Island. But I remember people telling me like, hey man, stay away from San Diego. Don't go to Seattle and don't even think about going to Portland, Oregon. And what did I do? I was like, yeah, I want to go to Seattle. I want to go to San Diego and Portland. Because, you know, for me, it maybe it was naive, or maybe I just kind of, you know, I believe in myself and I believe in beer. Not to sound cheesy, but I was like, hey, look, I know that you look at us like the big bad guy, but we make damn good beer and we're bringing, you know, a team of Goose Island people on the road. So it's like, whatever you think about Goose Island, here are the people that work there. So now like you're making contact and you're bridging that gap, because a lot of people, how often does someone in San Diego meet someone that works at Goose Island?
Right.
You know?
I guess, do you feel like, I don't know, were you like a great person for that, being like such a Chicago person, like selling this beer, like someone else coming in from like another city or joining the marketing team? They don't, maybe they don't have the love for Chicago, but they might like love the job or the beer. But you having like, it's Chicago's brewery, really. Yeah. At the end of the day, it is. So,
yeah. Yeah. You know, and I felt that that was what the case was, you know. And it was funny because on top of being a very Chicagoan kind of guy, I also was really deep into beer. So the cool thing was, you'd go to these places and they look at you and they're like, okay, so you're a beer guy, but like you work for Goose and you're owned by AB. So you guys are like Budweiser, blah, blah, blah. And I never took offense to, like, sometimes when I got back to my hotel room that night, I would scream into a pillow and be like, I wanted to punch that fucking guy, but, you know, in front of everybody. I played it cool, man. And, you know, they would quiz you like, well, did you ever hear of this? Ever hear of Ninkasi Brewing? I'm like, yeah. Well, ever hear of this? Yeah, man, I've got this beer and it's really good. I've had that beer. And then they're like, all right, so this guy obviously knows his beer, so maybe Goose isn't that bad. And then on top of that, we had Bourbon County Stout. So it was like, you hate me, but you want what I've got in my hand. So it was cool, man. It was very eye-opening. I learned so much, you know, about not just beer, but about people and how people respond to brands, and not just, you know, more brands, not just breweries, because Goose Island is, I feel like they're almost like an events company that happens to make beer, you know, but it's interesting to see how people respond to that, because no other breweries had the money to send 7 people from a brewery around the country to put events together. So that in itself, you walk into a place and people are immediately are like, oh, look at this guy, you know. But if you can talk the talk and walk the walk, people think a little bit differently about you. And maybe next time they were, you know, grabbing a beer and they saw Goose on the shelf, maybe the interaction that we had with them pushed him enough to grab our beer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody parties like the Goose Island Beer Company. That's for damn sure. Can you tell us, what can you tell us about this latest project that you're a part of, man?
Fee City or?
Yeah. Fee City.
So right before I started with Goose Island, you know, Carruthers and I had written the first book, and then Scholl and I, John Scholl from Cicerone and I, were talking about what the next step was for Mambecue, which is, you know, our grilling organization that we started. And I was getting way more into beer, obviously, and I was the first one of us three to get into beer professionally. But at that point, we were like hitting this really awesome peak where books coming out, starting to get into beer, like we're just learning so much. And I wanted to change things up a little bit. Mambecue was really fun and it got me to a lot of, it opened a lot of doors for me. I mean, I wouldn't have known you guys if it wasn't from Abiquiú, to be honest.
That's true.
You know?
That's true, yeah.
So it's like, but you grow, right? There's like this evolution that happens. And I loved what Mambiquiú was and what Mambiquiú is. And I had this conversation not too long ago, and somebody said, hey, man, you like built this brotherhood. And I said, yeah, I'm very proud of that, right? But a community is stronger than a brotherhood, I feel. And I wanted to build more of a community. The brotherhood was already there and it's strong, but a community is greater than a brotherhood. And I wanted to build a community through food and through beer. And that's where Feast City came about. And true story, before I started working at Goose, the name that we were using was Four Star Feast. So that was going to be what is now Feast City. And then I started working at Goose and Four Star Pilsner comes out. It's like such low hanging fruit. It's such a dumb, like, yeah, four star, right? So Goose Island releases that beer, and I got to sit in on a couple of marketing, what are those called? Focus groups, right? And it was funny when they were talking about four star feet or four star Pilsner, people were asking why it wasn't five star. And these are people in Chicago. So I kept that in the back of my head. I'm like, maybe Four Star Feast is not, you know, especially when you're talking about food, it's like, hey, have our very above average food.
Right.
So that's why after I left Goose, it was like, all right, I don't want to call it Four Star Feast. And I was going back and forth with Shoal. And I said, hey, man, I've got the time now. I want to do this. There's no better time than now. His kids are a little bit older now, too. So he's got more time, you know. Before the challenge was he had a really young daughter at the time. And then his wife, Alana, who works at Goose Island, she was pregnant. So, you know, how do you balance one kid, another kid on its way, and this passion project? So, John, it would have been impossible. And Carruthers and I were still cranking out the Mambiquiú stuff, you know, planning another book. So when all this happened at the end, it was like, all right, now I've got the time. I want to do this. And we tossed around some names. And I told John, I was like, what do you think of City Feast? And he goes, what about Feast City? And I said, oh, is that right? I'm like, is that next to Flavortown? And he's like, okay, they're Mambiquiú. I'm like, all right. You're the co-founder, so.
Well, it ties in nice to also the Fist City too, right?
So yeah, maybe. Carruthers and I have been talking about that. And he's like, hey, man, he's like, you know, let's do something. Let's get Revolution on board with Feast City. I'm like, of course, man, let's help each other out. You know, I'm doing this awesome thing with those guys again. So like it all fits. And, you know, the one thing that was a big bummer at Goose, they were very much like no Mambiquiú. Like you're either Goose or Mambiquiú. And I'm like, well, I don't live for my job. I have like a life outside of it. So, you know, they
what would gave be, me. What would be some of the conflicts though? I mean, one's about, they're both events, but one's beer, one's food. Like, why would there be a conflict?
Yeah, I don't know, man. I never thought that there would be a conflict. You know, I always thought it was one of those things that we can use, that Goose was able to use to leverage certain events. You know, when I'd go somewhere, you know, I had just written two books. So like that, to be able to go somewhere and say, hey, the author of these books is here doing an event, that helps out what we're doing, right? But some people in the company just didn't see it that way. And I wasn't going to try to fight it.
I guess they could be what concerned you could use your Goose/AB leverage to, I guess, sell more books or make a better name for yourself, right? As far as like, yeah. I guess a corporate side of that, be like, oh, he might take advantage of this and we don't want to be, oh, what if he does something bad?
Yeah. And the reality was like, you know, they knew me for years and it was like, come on, like I wouldn't do that. And that just not, I poured my heart and soul into Goose Island, you know, and it was sad that I wasn't able to like do more stuff around Mambiquiú. And towards the end, my role shifted. Their national focus didn't dissipate, but it just kind of, their footprint went reduced quite a bit. And then I jumped on the education team. So my boss on that side of things, she was cool with me pushing the Mambiquiú connection She thought that it held some weight. So she let me do stuff that was, you know, very food and beer oriented. So she saw that as an advantage. Like, here we've got someone with writing experience, like a published author. I'm not just like some, you know, like social media influencer. It was like, you know, there's an actual substance to this. So she saw that and she was like, by all means, like, let's piggyback on what you're doing to kind of get info for, or to get leverage for what we're doing. So, nice. Yeah.
Well, what drove you to, I guess, finally, or to make the leap? It seems like everyone who I know that works at Goose, like, and sounding like you too, like, you just have a lot of, I guess you get a lot of opportunities, right? So was it just something else? Was it a Ken Hunter meter? He just, you couldn't work with him anymore.
he made me drunk too many times. No, you know, I think there comes a time where you have to see everything in totality, right? So there was a ceiling. There was really no place for me to go on the marketing side. Like, every kind of job was already taken. You know, I had my boss ahead of me, and between my boss and me, there was two other people that were on my team that were there longer than I was. So, you know, it's like, all right, like, where can I go? And you get to a point where there's only so many decisions you make. You don't have creative control, and, you know, you become a number, right? Your ideas get thrown into a bin of a lot of ideas. And sometimes there's people in other positions that just flush your ideas because they see it as their job to have their ideas and not yours, kind of thing.
Sure.
And it's fine, you know, and that's how big companies work. At a certain point, we have to be realistic. Goose Island is not this small brewery, and it works for them. They taught me the beer business, and it worked, and it was lovely, and I still love so many people over there. Like, I will never stop loving Goose Island and the people. But, you know, I guess personally speaking, it's like one of those things where I had to do what was right for me, and I had to, you know, pursue what I felt was going to challenge me more. And to be honest, like, I wanted to head things up. When I was working on Migration Weeks, you know, I was managing that. I was the driving force. And then at a certain point, you become part of what's driving it. You're no longer the driver. It's kind of like, okay, cool. Like, go back and, you know, announce to the passengers what we're doing. You're no longer the pilot. And I don't know, I like flying a plane. Yeah.
I know you're not there now. Do you think, like, in our current situation where we're all at home, do you think they are having more issues convincing people to support them versus someone like Corridor or Maplewood? I know Nick has picked up beer from there many a times. And, like, that small business idea is like, well, I love Goose Island. I don't want to see it go anywhere, but I want to make sure more is there. Hopewell is there. Like, Goose Island is going to be fine. Do you have any thoughts on that? Or
I mean, right now, man, it's what is convenient and available, right? So Goose Island will be fine because they're everywhere. You know, you go to, let's say you go to, like, Danvers, Illinois, right? What the hell breweries down there? Like, there's not much local, like, you know, but you have to drive X amount of miles, X amount of time to get something local. But you can go down the street to a CVS or a Walgreens and you're going to find Goose IPA, right? So in that regard, they'll be fine. At Corridor and at Dry Hop and Roebuck, it's awesome to see how many people do want to support us and do care about our livelihood. And it's great. You know, it feels like working for, like, a legit Chicago brewery, because that's what it is. Like, these people realize that their decisions are directly affecting and impacting our business. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, the Goose Islands of the world, you know, Brad, to your point, like, people look at it and they're probably really like, if I buy a six pack or I don't buy a six pack, it's not going to matter. They have, like, a rich dad. They'll be fine. But realistically, right now, a lot of people are struggling. And, you know, I think Goose is struggling on the draft side. Everybody is. But as far as packaging, that's their sweet spot. You know, like, beer's up. You know, people's people that can get beer into, you know, different outlets, you've got an advantage there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't, not working in beer, just talking about it and drinking it. It's like I've run by, you know, all those breweries down Wood Street, and Goose Island's window's always open, but I don't see anyone there. But I've seen people go into Great Central and go over to On Tour, but I haven't seen anyone go into Goose Island. So it's just an interesting, like, who do people want to support? It could just be the time I'm there. You know, you got to support those Bourbon County things that they were selling on social media, sold out in like 15 minutes or something. So
over there grabbing a bottle of vanilla myself.
Like, so people, like you said, like, people might not want the 312, but they want that Bourbon County. So
yeah, for sure. And it's such an, I mean, these are unprecedented times. I mean, how cliche is that? But anyway,
you know, as the situation develops
in these times. But yeah, it's interesting, man. I still have a lot of friends all over the country that work at breweries or work in beer, and just kind of trying to see, like, trying to put your finger on the pulse at this moment is very difficult because everything is fleeting. You know, like, you'll have a really good day one day, and the next day it's like, where the hell did everybody go? You know? So it's fascinating. And trying to understand consumers and the decisions they're making is, that's a job in itself. You know, it's a challenge. You can't predict that stuff. You know, we've got Crushed by Giants that was supposed to be open. I actually had an email reminder on Monday that I was supposed to send out an invitation to, like, for media, like you guys and industry people for our party for like a peek at the new Crushed by Giants brewery. And it's like, that was like this thing that I'm on a phone call and it pops up and I'm like, holy shit. You know, weeks ago I was planning a party for a brewery, and now it's like, yeah, that's on hold indefinitely.
Right. Yeah. Speaking of that, like, I saw those photos pop up. Porch Drinking was sharing them.
Yeah.
I guess so. That spot was in the Heaven on 7 location, mm-hmm. right? Okay.
Yeah.
And we had been hearing about it for a while. Nick recently did like the three stop.
Yeah, it's one of the most interesting concepts where it's like, hey, we're gonna have four locations with four different concepts. I mean, that's pretty cool, you know. So I hit up all three. I'm like, what's better than just going to Corridor? You know, I'm just gonna go to all of them.
They're all so close to each other too. Exactly. And they all have a different feel and personality, which is great.
So what was the, or what will be the concept of Crushed by Giants? Like, because Roebuck is like the cocktail pizza place, Dry Hop is just kind of burgers and beer. We know Corridor is kind of like hazies and, I don't know, upscale bar food. Or I don't know a better way to describe the food there. Yeah.
Corridor is, the more time I spend over there, Corridor is like this, it's almost like a small town kind of brewery. That area there is fascinating to me. I'm a Sox fan, so I never make it near Wrigley Field. Right. But going up there and now working there, I like that area. And you've got single family homes. And, you know, the income there is the annual or the median income is pretty high. So a lot of houses, a lot of families, and that place Corridor just feels like this small town. And I love it. It feels like a small town brewery. Then you go to Dry Hop and it's more like, I don't know, man. It feels like more like rock and roll. Like, people go there for a beer and a burger, right? And yeah, and Roebuck is like this kind of like cool, dark place. And Crushed by Giants is in the middle, like smack in the middle of downtown. Like, we're kitty corner to Eataly. We share a building with Under Armour and AMC Theaters. You know, so like you can't get more tourist-centric than that area. But the cool thing is that space, and whatever you guys want to come by, let me know. I'd love to show you guys around. But it has like this really cool, like almost like a tavern kind of feel. It's, the wood is very nice and warm. It's very bright in there because of the windows. But it feels like if you didn't know you were in the middle of downtown, it would feel like a cool like brew pub, like in a cool small town, not town, like a smaller city. So I'm really excited because, you know, on top of having a really great brewer, we've got Dave Kearns, who was at Solomoth. Was at Great Central. He was at he started at Tribes, Haymarket. So he's been around and it's super talented guy. So, you know, the thing is like, when you think of like downtown breweries, there's Gino's East, which is like, you know, like a pizza place with like a small brewery, but it was like rock bottom. And, you know, unfortunately rock bottom is gone now, but nobody thinks of a brew pub in the middle of Chicago, of downtown Chicago. So for me, when I interviewed and they were telling me about that place, I mean, I was just licking my chops. I'm like, holy shit, that's gonna be really cool. Like, that's gonna be a really fun project because it's like, how do you market to that area?
Right.
You know, it's such transient. Like the consumer base is very transient, but there are a lot of people that live down there, and there's a ton of people that work in that area. So it'll be very interesting to see who comes in and who becomes our clientele.
Yeah, I think we've talked about Gino's before where the beer is, you know, it's pretty good, but you don't go there to ever to have a beer. Like, you go to Rock Bottom to have a beer. You don't go to Gino's to have a beer. You go there for pizza. And it's like, oh, hey, look, they have beer.
Yeah, that, you know, that project between us, like, it just never made the most sense to me. I love their pizza, you know, but who's this? Who are we to tell someone else that they can't open, you know, a passion project, right? So if it works for them, cool. I know they get a lot of their beer made over at Great Central. So Great Central makes amazing beer. So that's a plus for Gino's, you know? But yeah, you're right, man. I think of Gino's, I think pizza. I don't ever think Gino's beer.
That's an interesting space, man.
Yeah. So what's your favorite of the, you know, currently three spots? Which one would you find yourself at the most?
Wow. That's not a fair question. That really is not a fair question. So each one of them serves like a different purpose for me, right? Like it's like for me, it's very like emotion based too. Each space I have a different feel in each one, right? Dry Hop was one of those places that I started frequenting when it first opened, and it was like new in that area. And I was like, that's cool that this brew pub is here. And they always had good music in there. So you'd go in there and you have a couple beers, you go to Reckless Records, maybe catch a comedy show. So there's that kind of like that, those memories that are tied into Dry Hop. And when we were open, that place is still kind of like that. It's like a cool, like place to stop by for a good burger and a good beer. Roebuck being the new one, there's something sexy about Roebuck. Like, it's the lighting, the cocktails, but that pizza there is so damn good. So I really like that place. And again, I said I'm a homer, right? And I love Chicago tavern pizza, but there's something about that Neapolitan style pizza at Roebuck. It's wild yeast dough, so that crust is amazing, and the ingredients are super fresh, homemade mozzarella, and it's just like, oh man, I'm getting hungry thinking about it. That's a place that I would go in and, you know, order pizza, have a beer while I'm waiting for my pizza, and take home at least one or two pizzas. Corridor, a solid place to go sit down and have a couple of beers. You know, each one of them is so different, and they all are really like growing on me, which I really love. And the people there too, that's been, you know, the big seller was you go to each place and You get to meet the different people that make each place run, and they're all great. You know, especially right now, like I started a week before the shit hit the fan. So like here they are, like meeting this marketing guy for the first time. And then everything just kind of was like turned upside down. So, you know, I'm showing up because I'm going to be bugging people for social media posts, and I want them to feel comfortable with me and know that, like, you know, they're safe being who they are, and I want to capture that. And then this happens, and now it's kind of like, all right, we don't have, you know, 75% of the staff that we had when I started working there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And what stinks too is, like, again, like I started getting the feel for those places, and I was like, man, to be honest, I'm like, Roebuck's going to be my spot because it's nice and dark, and I can go there and like I can have a beer at the bar, pull up my computer and like chill. And then, yeah, then you can't go to places now. Like, yeah. Now I've got to wait till it's legal again.
Yeah, I never made it to Roebuck before it even all shut down. Nick's been three times?
Yeah. Not just because it's the newest spot, but it's like the cocktails, you know, the cocktails and you know, it ain't too many places, like you said, that you really just want to hang out, you know, and have another drink, maybe get another slice. You know? I enjoy that space a lot, man. Yeah.
And, you know, with places like that, and I'll go back to like Goose Island, right? What made Clybourne for me, why I fell in love with Goose Island, was just like the people there. And obviously the new Clybourne location, I'm not a fan of what they changed, you know, but the old Clybourne was, it felt like home, right? Like you can go there wherever and you never felt like a stranger. It could have been your first time walking into that place and you felt like you knew somebody there.
Yeah.
And that's how Corridor feels again. Like it's a very neighborhoody. Dry Hop is small enough where you can go there and sit at the bar and have a beer and, you know, be in the zone or talk to other people, talk to the bartenders. And Roebuck, same thing, very comfortable. And that's huge, man. And right now we don't have that. Like you don't, right now it's like, you're pretty much like a home for commodities, like food and beer, see you later. You know, like there's so many other things that make breweries and brew pubs. And right now we're not able to flex that. It's just like, get your shit and get out. Yeah. And it's unfortunate.
I was just thinking about Clybourne like the other day. I was like, I wonder if this is the final nail in the coffin for it to close for real now. Like, I know we talk about like the AB pocketbook is fine, but like this could just be like, yeah, no, we don't need that.
Yeah, you know, I really hope it's not, but to be honest, man, if I didn't work there as long as I did, I probably wouldn't have gone to the new Clybourne as many times as I did. It just, there was no, the soul that was in that space was removed. There was like this heart transplant. And they didn't replace another heart. They put some kind of box in there. And it, you know, I don't want to like rag on them, but I remember when I first walked in there after they reopened it, and a part of me wanted to cry. And I sincerely mean that. Like I was upset. I was like, man, like shit, the place that I had my first craft beer at is gone forever. And you walk into that place, I'm like, you know, if Cook County Jail ever made a brewery, this is what it would be like. It just felt so cold and so like, you know, it's like, don't get comfortable here, right? Keep moving kind of thing. And it sucks. Really sucks.
Did you get to see the bar in the barrel warehouse all put together? Okay. I didn't get to see it. But so did that kind of like fill that a little bit for you? Like knowing it's still there, like it's out there.
Yeah, you know, it's like going to the Chicago History Museum and seeing like a trolley car and being like, oh yeah, cool.
Okay.
You're like, you know, it's not like brick paved roads anymore, and it's okay. Like things change, but seeing the bar there was neat, but it was in this like warehouse. Like it was kind of like, hey, look, like, you know, like buying some kind of carousel and putting it in your attic or something. Every once in a while, someone gets to see it, but it's just not the same. It's, It's not the same heart that Goose Island used to have. But times change, right? The tap room on Fulton, you know, they did a really good job with that space. I like that space. You know, is it cozy like the old Goose Claiborne? No, but nothing ever will be. You want something that cozy, go to London, you know?
Yeah.
But I think with the space that they have there, they've done a good job. The staff is very friendly. And, you know, for people that go to Goose Fulton for the first time, I think people have a really good experience because the folks that work there are good people. They're fun people, and they make you feel comfortable. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So with the corridor and dry hop, so is there still beer going out the door almost every day?
Yeah. It was funny seeing the numbers. Yesterday wasn't one of the best days, and it was freaking Taco Tuesday. I was talking with Jacob from Cruz Blanca, and he's like, man, we got our asses handed. And in my head, you know, I'm like, this is a gimmick. Like, nobody gives a shit about taco or like Cinco de Mayo. And this is a Mexican guy saying that, because I'm like, I know it doesn't mean anything to our culture, really, you know.
But it fell on a Tuesday. Like, that is like so perfect.
You know, LeBron James is like, damn it. I invented Taco Tuesday. but yeah, it was funny because I'm like, why did we do so like average? And it's like, oh yeah, because like every Mexican place in Chicago had a line out the door, which is kind of funny. Yeah, but no, I mean we're still moving beer, man. People are still drinking, and like I said, Corridor's got that neighborhood feel. So like everybody in the neighborhood, and if you look at our social media too, I've been running it now, and it's like, seeing how people interact with Corridor, like they're very supportive. People feel like they know you, and it's cool, right? So they come in and they get their beer, they go home. Dry hop is a little bit more transient, but people are still very responsive to that. And on top of that, like the beers are good. So it's like, I've always said this, you know, back in the day when I was at Goose, people would run their mouth, and I'm like, look, we can say whatever we want to say, but if our beer's not good, then judge us based on that. And to the most simple form, that's what happens. Like, you can have the best food and the best marketing plan, but if your beer's not good, good luck, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's what helps at both Corridor and Dry Hop. And Roebuck, we've cut back the brewing, so we're pretty much making all the dry hop beers and selling them on both sides, Roebuck and Dry Hop. But,
oh, okay. That's interesting. Yeah.
And we just brewed the altogether beer at Dry Hop and at Corridor. So that's going to be exciting to put that out.
Oh, cool. You mentioned Cruz Blanca. I was surprised you didn't join that team over there. You were, every time I went to Cruz Blanca, you were there.
Dude, Cruz Blanca is, I was explaining this to someone, you know, I talked to Manny, the owner over there, and I love those guys. Like, they are family to me. So it's one of those things where you have to really think about it. And if I was younger, I would have been like, hey, I will do whatever it takes to work here. You know, and not even think about how the dynamic between Cruz Blanca and myself would be affected. But, you know, having experience and a little bit of wisdom, right? I'm like, yeah, like, I will continue to support those guys. I'm their biggest fan, and they are family to me. And like, I want to keep it that way, you know. And Jacob and I, he's one of my best friends, you know. Todd, same thing. And it's like, we talk about business, we talk about beer, we talk about the industry, and it's, I love it. And I don't want that to change. If I would have been on their salary, that would have, the dynamic would have changed. It just, and I don't want to mess with what I have. I've got a really beautiful thing with those guys, and I want to keep it that way.
Nice. Nick, didn't you just get a bottle from them recently?
Oh, yeah, man. I went and got the Lady Lupinata. So, that's I think that's the white ale. It's a golden ale.
Yeah.
It's like a 13% golden ale.
All those are high and delicious.
Their black lime Saison is one of the best beers I had last year. And the banana, the Ray Gordo, what it, oh, shit, what the, Jacob's going to kill me, but I forgot what the name of their, the banana stout is that was beautiful. Man, those guys are running such a great program over there for what he does. It's fascinating. I think they're the most underrated brewery in Chicago.
Yeah, we had a pair of their bottles on that Brad brought on the show for just like a, you know, a little post show, like, you know, side by side. And we were kind of blown away. I'm looking at Brad like, I don't want to say this is good as it is because, you know, because you brought these beers. Why is this beer so fucking good? It was unreal, man.
I don't know. They rival, I think, any of the, you know, Deepwood series or even the Bourbon County South series. You're just like, what is happening here at this tiny little place on Randolph, that this two-floor brewery kind of thing?
Yeah. I mean, look, Jacob has it still dialed in, you know, and it's funny, like, me having worked at Goose and seeing how those brewers worked, you know, with Quinn in the R&D department at Goose, seeing how his, like, what turned his wheels, right? And then, like, being so close to Jacob and seeing how he operates, and now getting closer to the brewers at Steve at Dry Hop and Corridor. And it's like everybody, there's like this like common denominator. There's like this drive. Each one of them wants to make the best beer. And people go, yeah, well, everybody does. I'm like, no, I've met a lot of brewers that are just kind of like, yeah, whatever. I'll do an IPA. What's the recipe? These guys are like, they really want to perfect and hone their craft. And Jacob, of all those guys, he's the one dude where you're like, man, just seeing how he approaches beer making is fascinating, you know? Yeah.
Man. Make me want some Cruz Blanca now. I don't know if I have. I think all the bottles are at like the office / studio. So I don't think I have it here. Damn.
I feel like going over, like, they're on top of like their beer too, their food's so damn good. You know, it's like, man, their tacos. That's why I was there all the time. I'm like, their food's freaking good and their beer's good. Like, what more do you want? You know, it's what was said about Clybourne was they changed their menu up and it was like they were trying to catch up and trying to like recapture the magic they had at the original pub, and it just wasn't happening. But, you know, the cool thing about like Dry Hop, their burgers are freaking amazing. Roebuck's got an amazing beer, pizza, and it's like, this is good. You need that. Like, you need good everything or else you're not going to be able to compete.
That's why I think I'm at Corridor often. Not only it's close to the studio, but like the food is really good. Like that burger is great there. That chopped salad, I rave about that all the time. That's like the best chopped salad in the city.
Who said that? It's so random.
The chop salad is really good, but the fries are good. So today I popped over there. I was filming our chef. We make our own pizza dough in-house at both Roebuck and at Corridor. So I was filming it because I'm going to put together like a little film for that. And I was craving a Potbelly's sandwich. So I grabbed the Potbelly's, I came back, and I ordered a side of fries because they're so goddamn good. Nice. And they're like, why don't you just get chips? I'm like, because these fries are better. That's why.
Well, I feel like we can't, you know, wrap up this episode without talking about The Last Dance, because you've been posting all kinds of photos. I know Nick's been watching, and there he is. He's got his Chicago Bulls glass. And so
I've got a Bulls onesie. So it was funny because when I was watching The Last Dance, in my head, there's always like three different Jessies when I approach sports. There's like the Homer Jesse that loves all things Chicago, all things Bulls, worships Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen. And then there's like the skeptical me that's like, man, if the Pistons would have done this or that, would have Jordan been that good? Then there's like the other part of me that's just like, whatever. So that's kind of like these – maybe I'm schizophrenic. I don't know. But when I watch The Last Dance, it's like all these different emotions. And on top of all of, you know, like my sports emotions, they're just like nostalgia in general. Where I'm like, man, I remember when the Bulls won the first championship. I was upstairs watching on a TV, and my parents were downstairs. And when the game when the game was over, my dad was like screaming downstairs with my mom. She's like clapping and crying, and I was upstairs like trying not to show my parents that I was crying upstairs. And I just remember fireworks going off outside, and my dad's like, "I'm gonna go shoot the gun up in the air." I'm like, "I grew up at Norwood Park." I'm like, "Dad, this is not cool here. Do not do this." But it was just such a great feeling because I had been such a Jordan file for so long, and you felt like you were part of his life. Obviously, we didn't know Michael Jordan, but it's like you feel like this is who we are. You know, we're like part of Michael's inner circle, and we saw him go from like this skinny, like talented basketball player to this cold-blooded basketball killer, which, you know, and it's one of those things where I was always told, like, don't ever look to like famous people to be like your role models. And not that I ever saw Jordan as a role model, but there was like these traits and attributes where I'm like, I want that. And when I played any sport, I was not a big guy growing up, but I was like, I want to beat whoever I'm playing. Yeah. And at my age, like, I can't play basketball anymore. I've had a lot of injuries, but I can still play softball. And I, in my head, when I go up to that, to the mound, I'm like, I feel like Frank Thomas in my head, you know, like I feel like Jordan. Like if anybody slights me, I'm like, okay. And it's funny because people look at me and be like, easy. But if someone goes up to bat, I play third base, and they kind of like, I don't know, if I feel like they disrespect me, I'm like, I'm going to get you out just to put you in your place. And I'm like, what the hell? This is softball. But I attribute that to Michael Jordan.
Damn. Nick, you got, I don't know, you got all those memories coming back watching this?
It's so fun, man. I mean, because those videos when we were kids, you know, like Jesse said, there's been like four Jordan documentaries, you know, Come Fly With Me and Rare. I got like three Jordan books. Like there's so much to know about them, but then there's still more to process from those teams. And then like six out of eight summers, you know, we spent, you know, a lot of late spring and a lot of early summer, you know, watching Bulls games every week, playoff games, you know, so parades every summer at Grant Park. those were the best of times, man. I mean, the city hasn't been that good. 6 out of 8 years, we were world champs. We've never seen that in this town. I mean, you know, the Bears when you know, in the early 30s or whatever. But I mean, in the modern era, we haven't seen anything like that.
Well, because then you also had Frank Thomas at the same time. Like you had like that was just like crazy time in Chicago sports. I don't know.
Yeah.
The funny thing is, like, when the Bulls were winning, you know, people, you had this, like, clear division, right? The Bulls ushered in a whole new era of basketball. You know, people will tell you, well, the Celtics won all those championships. But I'm like, dude, me at 6'1", 215 pounds, would have been, like, one of the biggest threats in basketball back then. Like, and... in late 80s, early 90s, NBA, I would have been who I am and not like anything, right? So that was one of the cool things too about the Bulls, where it's like, this is what they became, this like prototypical NBA team. And people wanted to be like the Bulls because they felt that the Bulls were like this winning machine. So the NBA kind of morphed into what the Bulls were and like the Ultra Bulls, right, in the future. And then you got guys like LeBron James, who is pretty much a linebacker that could jump like Jordan. Is he like Jordan? No, he's very skilled, very talented, but he doesn't have that killer instinct that Jordan and Kobe have, you know? So the Bulls were such a force. And then watching the documentary too, like things that you don't think about when you're a kid and you're watching them. When you're a kid, you're like this fan, and you don't think about like the social implications. You don't really think about the psychology behind what was happening with those players and that team. It's so much. That documentary is beautiful.
Yeah. Well, hearing them talk about the Pistons and like just how you throw, I don't know, punches out there. It was like, wait, so basketball was like hockey? Like, it was just like, I was like, not, I wasn't like invested maybe as much as you guys are. I was like, I didn't know that. Like, that's crazy. That idea is nuts.
Well, it's, you know, the NBA now is, you can't, if you look at LeBron too hard, they'll call a foul on you. And one of the funniest things that I think is, if you ever watch LeBron get fouled kind of hard, it's not even like really hard, but he gets up and like he has to be held back and he puffs his chest out. I'm like, dude, come on, LeBron. Like, when's the last time you think LeBron ever got into a fight? Ever since he was like 14 years old, he had like a click. Nobody would ever let him fight, you know? And you can't say that about Jordan and Pippen and Rodman. Like, those guys had to fight to earn respect. LeBron didn't have to go through any. Like, LeBron was anointed king the minute he stepped on a high school basketball court. And that's what I mean. That's part of it, too. You look at guys like Jordan. I mean, he felt slighted, and he was just out to prove everybody wrong. Pippen was, you know, these guys are just, like, guys that really had to work to get to where they were. And the NBA now, it's not like that. These guys are – they have so many hanger-ons so young in their lives where it's like, yeah, we can make money off this guy. Let's just treat him with kid gloves. And I don't feel like they've earned the right to be these, like – I don't know. I don't think they're what it was before.
I don't know. What, we got two more episodes, right?
Four.
Four. Oh, okay.
Two more weekends. Yeah, two more weekends.
Oh, okay. I thought there was only two. Nice. Okay.
Getting Beer Delivered More, and then The Last Dance. Those have been short list, but those two things have been cool.
Keeping you sane.
Tiger King or Lion Tiger King?
I didn't watch Tiger King. No,
I tried. I wasn't for me. I fell asleep.
It was interesting. I heard the podcast before I saw the show. Okay. So I had heard the podcast all about it, and I was like, oh, wow, that was really crazy. And then people started talking about this show. I'm like, oh, that sounds like this podcast that I listened to. And lo and behold, it was about that. And seeing what you heard was, oh, man, it was weird. I've never felt more normal, I guess.
Yeah, I didn't watch it. I've seen all the memes, so I feel like I've watched it. I don't need to. I get it. Well, awesome. Jesse, thanks so much for like chatting with us and like sharing some of the beer. Like, this was great.
Of course, man. Thank you guys for having me. I love talking to you guys.
Like, we're definitely excited to, you know, one, to see everything open back up, but especially like Crushed by Giants open and like go to that space. You know, looking forward to just things opening is amazing, but knowing that we have like new things that will be opening is really cool too.
Yeah, you guys gotta come by whenever, pick a day, and you know, we'll pop over there, snap some pics. It's a beautiful space, man. It's really cool.
Nice. Cool. So where can people find out more about what all the projects are doing, if they want to pick up beer, I don't know, get food, whatever's happening?
Yeah. Crushed by Giants, you know, we're just hanging out on social media right now, but I'm posting up pictures of what we've got going on. So people know and get to see the space before it's completely open. Corridor Chicago, Dry Hop Chicago, and Roebuck Chicago.
Nice.
And then for me, go check out Feast City. We're feast.city on Instagram. And, you know, right now all the posts were about the team behind it. But before you know, we're going to have food, drink, and other stories up there, which will be cool.
Awesome. And how about you, Nick? Where can people get in touch?
Right on, man. I'm on Twitter at Nicosio.
I'm on Twitter at BRED, Chicago Beer Pass, Chicago Beer Pass, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, website. We have an episode with Foreign Exchange coming up later in the week or next week. So look out for that. They're over there brewing at Church Street or Church. Yeah. Church Street. Yeah.
Yeah. Church Street.
Yeah. Nice. So we'll be talking to them. Sean Curry hooked us up with them. So yeah, should be good. That'll do it. Thanks for listening.
Cheers.
Thanks.